Welcome to week two of the Ryan and Jeremy Show. How you doing, Ryan?
Hey, my name came first this time.
Did I say Ryan and Jeremy Show?
Yep. Well, and thank you so much for that, too.
It's going to change every week. I
think it's good rotation, though. Also, we got Trip for our name last week. I was over at the Mattamy Athletic Center, and I was talking to our boss, Jim McClarty, and he was like, the Jeremy and Ryan Show? Couldn't you have come up with a better name than that?
It's quite possible we could have.
Thanks, Jimbo.
Anyway, baseball. Baseball has started. It's fantastic.
It has started.
Quite an interesting opening series, we can say. Some series are done. Some are still have a game or two left. But
yep, including the Toronto Blue Jays, who kicked off their season on Tuesday against Cleveland Indians here at the Rogers Center. You and I were both in attendance for that one.
We were.
It was doing very different roles.
It was quite the festive event. Probably the loudest I've heard the Rogers Center before a game. There was probably the most anticipation and much excitement. You could really feel the energy before the game. Once the game started, it was very lackluster because it was honestly one of the most boring baseball games I've seen in a long time.
The first inning was very, very much exciting and whatnot because everyone wanted to...
Yeah, absolutely, but nothing happened.
No.
So
nothing happened for a large portion of that game either.
It was unfortunate. The game just didn't really live up to the billing, which happens a lot for opening day. And
happens a lot in baseball.
Really. I've always been one to think that opening day in baseball is the most hyped sporting event opening day out of all the major sports. For some reason, it's just the greatest opening sporting first game experience for fans. And unfortunately, just didn't live up to the expectation. The Jays couldn't get on base. They had a combined four hits until Jose Bautista's home run last night in the ninth inning. In 19 or 18 innings, they had a combined four hits. So the Jays' bats are
silent.
Silent.
But then again, you got to take into consideration, and let's just point out that the Blue Jays are 0-2 to start the year.
Which isn't really a bad thing.
No, I mean,
it sucks for them, but,
yeah, but
you know, as JPR and CBS said,
there's 162 games in a season for a reason.
Yeah.
Right? You aren't going to win the season in the first series. It's a matter of consistency, though. So the way I evaluated the first game and seeing it in person is Cleveland Indians can play defensive baseball. They played really good defensively. There was a lot of rallies for the Jays. We even saw it in the first inning, actually. You know, they had Jose Reyes on first base after being walked, and then Melky Cabrera lines to short. Asdrubal Cabrera makes a beautiful play and doubles Reyes up. And actually, Asdrubal Cabrera was the best player on the field that night.
I don't know. You can remind me, but I know it's two games in, but I remember someone on this podcast saying that the Cleveland Indians might be a very surprising team and could do very well. I don't remember who that was. I mean, please remind me, but just saying.
Hey, Jeremy, did you say that, man?
I think it did, actually. what do you think of JP and Dickey? I thought Dickey's was a little off himself. He got going as the game got along, but four or five balls got past JP and Cebia.
And it was charged with three pass balls on Tuesday evening at the Rogers Center, and it was just painful
and
to watch.
Two of them directly affected the scoreboard.
Yep.
They put runners in scoring position, and from there, you know, and that one cost them a double. One cost them a walk, I think, or a, would be a double play. So, does he catch next game, or does the scary Henry Blanco catch the next
game?
Well,
we actually found out last night, John Gibbons announced that Henry Blanco will be the catcher for Dickey on Sunday. And I think if I'm Gibbons in this situation, I think it's just more so you want to get your bench guys into the action. Mark DeRose is going to be starting this evening in game three of the set, and Blanco will make his first start on Sunday, I believe. And against the Boston Red Sox, that's going to be an entertaining series. But I don't know. I don't think one game is enough to tell, because with saying that and seeing everything, Dickey was nervous too. He was playing in front of almost 50,000 people, and then the however many people were watching at home, that there's got to be some nerves there too.
And here's the thing, if you do make Blanco Dickey's personal catcher, if the Jays do end up making the playoffs, and Dickey's one of your, you know, main pitchers, and he pitches say every 3 games, you don't want to take JP's bat out of the lineup.
See, in that case, though, Jeremy, I would take Adam Lind out of the lineup because he's awful. Put Edwin Encarnacion at first base.
Oh, he already is.
Yeah. And then put JP in the DH spot. That's what I would do in that case because Lind's bat has been awful so far. I don't think he's had a hit so far in 2013.
He has had 2 double plays.
That's a great statistic to have.
Yeah.
But that's what I would do if I was John Gibbons. But then again, you know, waiting.
It's a little premature, of course.
Very premature. The season is 2 games in. But see how the Jays season goes. See how Blanco catches. And who knows? I mean, Josh Toll catch Dickey all last season. He's in AAA to start the year. If he plays well, then who's to say that Blanco is his position is...
Safe,
exactly.
What do you think of Brendan Morrow's performance last night? 8 Ks, 6 innings. Looked like he looks good. I mean, nothing too crazy. Wasn't hit hard. 1 run. I thought his performance was good. I mean, for the first day, I went in the locker room after the game and he was part of the media scrum. He's like, yeah, I would have liked to have gone longer, but. You know, if this is my production for 6 innings for the rest of the season, then I think that's okay. And I agree. If he can do that over 6 innings, then that's fine. 4 hits, 8 Ks.
He was consistent. And I think that's the thing with Brandon Morrow that we will like to see the most this season is consistency. Mm-hmm. And last year, he was consistently good. He's a dominant pitcher. He can strike you out whenever. And he's the perfect guy to have in that number 2 spot of your rotation. You have Dickey, who's the knuckleballer, and then you come back the next day with Morrow, who just throws
heat,
and then day 3 you go to Mark Burley, who's a soft throwing left-hander, back to Josh Johnson, who's a hard throwing right-hander, and then J.A. Happ, who can spot his pitches really well and who's had a great spring training. I think their starting rotation right now is beautiful, and I think if Morrow can keep that up, the performance like last night, then absolutely.
I have a lot of faith in Morrow, and I think this year he's going to break out. We started to see that last year before he got hurt. He was just starting to find that groove, and he could command the strike zone like no one else. Well, I mean, like he had never done before, and that's always been his thing, you know. He's always had the power, but he's never had the command. He's never had the ability to locate his pitches exactly where he wants to, and if he can really start to do that consistently, he's going to be a very scary pitcher for this league.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, you know, Morrow is one of those guys that will give you those 6 innings. And I don't, for the most part, and I don't think you need to worry about him having any short performances unless he gets rocked. And as long as he can stay healthy, then he's going to be a dominant pitcher for the Jays rotation and maybe even their best pitcher this season.
Now, someone who's gotten off to a pretty hot start, the youngster Bryce Harper, youngest player in MLB history to hit 2 home runs on opening day in his first 2 at-bats.
The only 2 runs for the Washington Nationals.
Well, when you have Steven Strasburg on the mound, you don't need any runs because he'll just strike out all 27.
Well, technically, you do need runs.
But you need one. Steven Strasburg had himself a day, but, you know, Bryce Harper's who we're talking about. First pitch he saw. Gone. That's incredible. He's still 19 years of age, or 20 years of age now. He's in 1992. Kid's a phenom. And, you know, we talked about, is he going to have a sophomore slump? Is Mike Trout going to have a sophomore slump? Bryce Harper doesn't look like he's going to have a sophomore slump.
No, and I mean, Jeremy, if you look at his stats so far this season, batting .500, 4 hits already on the year, 2 of them being home runs, and a slugging percentage of 1.375.
And he's already day-to-day with a thumb injury. So, kid's a battler. Kid battles.
He battles, and I mean, I don't know. I really like Bryce Harper, and I think he's going to be instrumental to the success of the Washington Nationals this season. If you have him batting in the number two hole before Ryan Zimmerman,
who hasn't gotten off to a great start.
But we got to remember, two games in. But, like, unbelievable. Hey,
well, Brantley's for the Indians is batting like 900.
Yeah. So,
well, two games in or not, you know, when someone goes 9 for 10.
Well, yeah. And he's had a really good start. He's just been seeing the ball really well. But other than him, really, the Indians haven't had a whole lot of offense either.
But Nationals looking good with Bryce Harper, Steven Strasburg, that pitching staff. It's
they're going to be a team to watch out for, and a lot of people are picking them.
They haven't given up a run this year, the Nationals.
No, they won 2-0 the first game. They won 3-0 last night after taking the day off Tuesday. So these guys are good. These guys are hot, and they're ready to make a postseason run. But, you know, we'll see how we'll see how things go.
Absolutely.
So, Jeremy, there's some other pitchers. We mentioned Steven Strasburg that are starting off hot this season. Yu Darvish among those pitchers. What do you make of his performance against the Houston Astros on Wednesday night?
Unfortunately, I didn't get to watch any of it just because of being at the Jays game and then activities afterwards. But I think it's awesome to see that Darvish...
My apologies, that was on Tuesday night, not Wednesday.
Darvish really has a lot of potential, and I think people saw that last year, but they weren't confident that it would regain this year. If you throw a perfect... If you're one out away from throwing a perfect game in your first start of the season, that's incredible. Like, obviously throwing a perfect game any time of the year is amazing, but the second... Your first start of the season, that's just... There's no words to describe it. And it's unfortunate that he lost with two outs in the ninth on a comebacker that went straight through his legs. But this guy can pitch, and he can pitch in this league, and he's going to be dominant for the Texas Rangers all year.
Looking at his stats, actually, from Tuesday night, the Rangers won that game 7-0. And Darvish pitched 8 2/3 innings, allowing no runs, only one hit given up, 14 strikeouts. Guy was just dominant, and he only had to throw 111 pitches. So, for a guy that, you know, went 17-9 last season, I personally predicted that he was going to end up like a Daisuke Matsuzaka. But a performance like this, showing everyone, including ourselves and all the other critics out there, that Yu Darvish is going to be a premier pitcher in this league.
Now, it was interesting to see that as soon as he gave up the hit, Ron Washington took him out, which I kind of agree with, just because it's early in the season. You don't want your pitcher throwing that many pitches, and he was getting up there. But I think he's going to be a lot of fun to watch this year. Yeah. And if he can continue, obviously, it'd be unexpected if he continued this pace. But
speaking of,
he's going to give the Rangers just a lot to work with.
Yeah, speaking of pitch counts, on Tuesday at the Jays game, Dickey had thrown almost 100 pitches through 5 innings, and then John Gibbons put him back out there for the 6th. Were you concerned with that? I was a little bit concerned.
I wasn't concerned. I mean, I think with Dickey, his arm is a little bit different. Just because of the... what's he missing in his shoulder? His UCL? He's missing a tendon in his shoulder, which makes it a lot different, and that's why he can't have Tommy John surgery, or that's why that type of surgery won't be affected. Obviously, you don't want to tire his arm out right away, but I think it was important for, A, Dickey's confidence, and B, to just kind of continue to get him in the groove.
Okay.
And it's a long season, and the Jays will have rest, and they'll be able to, you know, get him days off and whatnot, but I think it was more... Not necessarily just about the pitch count. I mean, Morrow had 100 pitches through 6, and that's why he came out. But he throws heat, right? Dickey is...
Knuckles, mixes, yeah. Speed, that sort of thing.
Right? So it's not as taxing on the arm. Obviously, it's, you know, it takes a lot of work to throw 6 or 7 innings of a baseball game, but there's the difference between I think Dickey and Morrow, or Dickey and Darvish. And Dickey and Clayton Kershaw, who had himself an opening day.
Clayton Kershaw was on fire.
9 innings, 4 hits, 7 Ks, oh, and a game-winning home run. That's right. The Dodgers' opening day starter hit the game-winning, well, what ended up being the game-winning home run, pitched a 7-strikeout shutout against the defending world champions.
Only 94 pitches, Jeremy. He had 60 pitches, I believe, through 6 innings, I believe. Or just unbelievable, you know? And he ended up only with throwing 94 pitches.
Didn't even walk a batter.
No.
That's efficient.
That's super efficient. And he threw 7 strikeouts too, which is just helps his cause. But like, man, if he is as good as this start, and I mean, it's sort of expected though. I mean, San Francisco, they don't produce a whole lot of offense ever. And that's been a struggle for them, and that will continue to be a struggle for them. Melky Guerra provided them a lot of offense last season before.
Their offense did okay in the playoffs.
It did all right in the playoffs, but that was because of Pablo Sandoval.
Who has gained a little bit of weight.
Yeah, well, doesn't he always?
Big Panda.
It's my guy. Kung Fu Panda, yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. Kershaw was amazing, and the Dodgers won that game 4-0. So, I don't know. They're going to be good. The Dodgers are going to be good, and Clayton Kershaw specifically is going to be good, even though after that game, the Dodgers have lost 2 straight.
So with pitching, we've seen some pretty dominant pitching performances. We've seen a lot of strikeouts. Is this just a early season trend? Are the batters just getting caught up, or is this going to be another year of the pitcher?
It's tough to say right now, but I mean, early on, I think the adrenaline is definitely there, and it's more so in the pitcher's favor, mm-hmm. In my opinion at least. They got the crowd behind them. Everyone's really excited right now. And the batters, you know, they're still adjusting to their home area. Take the Blue Jays, for example. It's flipping cold out here in Toronto. It's supposed to go up to 10 degrees today, but I mean, it's still in the minuses. It was snowing on opening day. Not really the mindset that you really have going into a baseball game. That's why these guys are pros, however, but at the same time, it's still going to be, as a normal human being, it's still going to be hard to adjust to that sort of thing. Personally, I feel as though this is probably going to be a trend that will continue. Pitchers, and we've seen this over the last 3 or 4 seasons, have gotten progressively much better and really have just dominated. We've seen that with the amount of perfect games that have been happening around Major League Baseball. So I would have to say this trend will start, but I would also have to say that, you know, bats are slowly going to get there. I don't think any team is going to superly outmatch the other one. Especially offensively in the early going here in April.
I want to bring back to you Darvish for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Former Blue Jays broadcaster Alan Ashby had some an interesting comment during the broadcast about Darvish. I believe he said maybe that'll help him learn English.
This is exactly what he said. So the conversation went like this. His color guy, Jeff Blum, said, "Man, gosh, that has to be a tough pill to swallow, as in Darvish wasn't able to finish the perfect game." Ashby came back and said, "That'll force the guy to learn some of the language here in America." And then Blum said, "Some of the more inappropriate language. I'm loving it. They'll probably learn that in instantly coming over here, but that was a fantastic performance." I think Ashby was referring to Darvish dropping some F-bombs maybe after being hit or giving up that hit.
I think there, I mean, for someone that didn't see the game, there's obviously more context that we might not be provided with. And I'm sure that Mr. Ashby was not trying to cross the line or say anything racially or socially, you know, unacceptable. That being said, you have to know what you can say, or if you're trying to say something like that, maybe say it differently, or saying, you know, maybe Darvish has picked up on some of the inappropriate language in the North American society or something. Obviously, they're not going to say something like that just because it's not poetic like it is in baseball, but there's many different ways to say it without crossing a racial line, I think.
But come on, man. You know as good as I do that whenever you're broadcasting a game, words just come out of your mouth sometimes.
Absolutely, but that's your job to think about what you're saying and know what you're saying and make sure that you're being censored. I mean, you go out there and some people swear in their normal vocabulary, but when you're in the broadcast booth, you have to know that you're not supposed to swear. There's certain things you have to know to say, and if you realize you're trying to say something and you realize that it could be crossing a line or it sounds really stupid, just stop yourself. If you can somehow do that, because I know it's tough sometimes, but you really have to, and this is a professional broadcaster, and I'm nothing compared to him, obviously, and you just have to know when something might not be right, and there has to be a different way to say something. There has to have been a different way where he could have gotten the same point across, saying, you know, Darvish is maybe picking up on some of the North American slang, you know, really getting along with the boys in the clubhouse using some of those swear words. There's different ways. I don't think he meant it in a negative way, saying, you know, Darvish, you need to learn English. Ichiro's been in this league for what, 10, 12 years, and he still uses an interpreter.
Yeah.
So I don't think it was supposed to be an offensive comment. I think it was just an ignorant comment.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know. And that is the job of a broadcaster to know that sort of thing, to be professional. But as I was talking to Dirk Hayhurst yesterday in an interview that I was doing for a piece, he said, you know, the hardest part about, or one of the tougher parts of broadcasting, especially baseball, is sometimes it can get boring. You know?
Have to fill time like no other sport.
Fill time, exactly. And that's what makes baseball unique, because games can drag on for 4 hours. But you have to somehow keep listeners engaged. You know, it's a tough call for Ashby. He's one of my favorite broadcasters, actually, because he has a great voice. He's just a natural. And I'm glad that he got a chance with the Astros. But I don't know. I think it's just one of those things that happen. But, you know, it will also, after all the outcry, it will also be something that will never happen again, too.
So you were talking about how broadcasters have to keep fans entertained for long games. Last night we had our first extended extra innings game last night. 16 innings between the St. Louis Cardinals and the Arizona Diamondbacks before the Diamondbacks won it in a walk-off at home.
Oh, baby, what a long game that was.
16 innings, well, one is obviously long. Two, it sucks, you know, for beginning of the season. As someone who now works in the media business, someone was sitting there at Sportsnet, sitting there at ESPN, TSN, all the stations in the East, and they were sitting there watching that game, clipping that game, and that game starts at 10 o'clock Eastern, and that game doesn't finish till 3 o'clock in the morning. Man, West Coast extra inning games suck.
Yeah. And we're even creeping up on hockey playoff season, and sometimes those games can go to 3 overtimes. Actually, the game last night, 5 hours and 32 minutes was the exact official time for that game. Just awful.
And, I mean, at least it was relatively high scoring. There was, yes. You know, there was some action, not like the Jays game last night where there was nothing. But what does that do for your rotation? Or not necessarily your rotation, but your bullpen. Like, you're going to need your 3 starter to basically try and go 9 tonight.
Well,
Do you have any relievers left?
Well, if you look at the stats from last night, neither starting pitcher for either team pitched well. You had Lynn for St. Louis, who only went 4 innings. He gave up 4 earned runs on 6 hits. And then McCarthy on the other side was even worse. 5 innings, 6 earned runs on 9 hits, only striking out 1.
So, and that was his debut in Arizona as well.
And that's his debut in Arizona. How tough is that? And then, you know, if you're Arizona, you're using 6 guys in the bullpen. And then if you're St. Louis, you're using 8 guys in the bullpen?
Well, that's a very St. Louis Cardinals type of thing.
Yes. Use
a lot of relievers. But it's interesting to see that Arizona's Colemaner went 5 innings last night. That means he probably pitched from the 11th on. And that you don't normally see that.
No, but at the same time, it eliminates him from your options for the next.
Yeah, he's probably done for the next 2 games, maybe.
Yeah, 2-3 games.
Yeah.
At least 3 days. Yeah. Hopefully they won't need him any more than that. But no, that remains.
And that's why you need a long innings reliever.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why you need the Brett Cecils.
Exactly.
For the Blue Jays. So yeah, I mean it's obviously tough on the bullpen and it just stretches out and makes it harder on the manager. But with that said, a reliever a starting pitcher the next day is almost like, okay, my guys are in the pen or a little bit tired. Maybe I need to try and stretch this thing out to 7 innings worth.
And I think, well, just to bring it back to the Blue Jays, of course, because that's what we do. I think that's going to be a strength for them. The fact that maybe their bullpen might be a weakness, but they're going to have the ability to throw Josh Johnson or Brandon Morrow and out there after games where the other pitchers might have gotten hit hard, and they'll be able to go deep in the game.
And that's the thing about last year that's different from last year to this year. Last year you had inexperienced guys like Drew Hutchison and Kyle Drabek that. There was so much pressure on them, and they were so inexperienced that if they were getting hit hard, then obviously they're going to take them out as soon as possible. And that's what John Farrell did. And that's why the bullpen was so tired come the end of the year, and that's why they were so awful in August and September.
Now, you mentioned John Farrell. He makes his return to the Rogers Center tomorrow night with the Boston Red Sox. What do you think that will be like?
He's going to get booed hard. He's going to get booed so hard. He says that, he didn't request a trade, but we all know that what kind of manager gets traded, And I think front brass is not stupid enough to just trade away their manager. And I think, I like John Farrell, and I think he had the potential of being a really good manager, and I think he, but saying that, I think he always wanted to be back in Boston. He spent a large amount of time there with Terry Francona, and I think after Francona left at the end of 2011, that Farrell would have wanted to go back then, and I think the Red Sox wanted him then too, instead of picking Bobby Valentine and then just completely blowing out that season. I think if John Farrell was the manager for Boston last year, things would have been completely different, and they would have still had, and they would still have Adrian Gonzalez, they would still have Kevin Youkilis, and they would still have a lot of other core guys in their lineup. What do you think?
He is Boston's guy, and he always has been, and I thought it was weird that if he even had that sort of inclination that he might have wanted to go back to Boston one day, that it was weird that he would go to a rival. And I mean, at the same time, it's beneficial because he would know Boston's players. And I'm not saying that he came here to, screw the Blue Jays or whatever. But I just think if he knew that Boston was where he wanted to be, I understand that he probably wanted the managerial, spot, his first chance, but I don't know why he didn't stick it out in Boston maybe a little longer. And it's tough to blame Anthopoulos for that because he wanted to go with someone fresh, he wanted new.
But it was also a risk for Anthopoulos too because Farrell had no managerial experience.
So maybe it was an error on both sides. Maybe Farrell should have stayed and Anthopoulos should have gone with someone else. It's tough to say that at this point. Obviously it didn't work out, but the Jays, they've gotten some assets out of it. I believe Jeffers is who they got out of. I mean, they got Mike Avilas originally from Boston, then they traded him and Yan Gomez to Cleveland to be with Francona, and they got, I believe it was Jeffers.
Yeah, and I was a little bit surprised that they didn't hang on to Avilas, but then I guess we know why. I believe Anthopoulos knew all along that he was close to getting Reyes. That's why he did trade Avilas. But I like Mike Avilas, and I'll be interested to see what he does this season. One last thing here before we wrap things up, Jeremy. Roy Halladay's performance last night. Fill us in a little bit on that. The former Blue Jay.
Well, he pitched 3 1/3. He gave up 6 hits, 5 runs, 3 walks, but had 9 strikeouts. He only got 10 outs. 9 of his 10 outs were strikeouts. He gave up 2 home runs. I don't even know really how to describe that game for him. 2 home runs, 3 walks, 9 strikeouts. His ERA is now 13.50. That's not really the Roy Halladay we know to expect. The 9 strike, you don't see someone give up 5 runs and home runs, 6 hits, but have 9 strikeouts out of only 10 outs. I know his velocity's down. He's had a little bit of a stomach virus during the spring training. And have we seen the end of Doc? Does the Doc need...
There was a ton of talk in spring training about how his velocity has gone down. It's hovering near, almost the 80s range, mm-hmm. but it is fastball, which has never been seen before. And it's really sad to see. He's 35 years old. I don't know. I think Doc, it's only his first start, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no need to panic. But
no need to panic.
There is cause for concern.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know. I feel as though
this is a guy that consistently goes 8 innings.
Yep. But he hasn't over the last couple years either, since going over to Philadelphia.
Last year was his first real year of some sort of decline.
Yep. And it's sort of, we saw in this first game that it's continuing to go down. It's tough to say. Cole Hamels has got to be good for Philly if they're going to compete. And if Roy Halladay is going to be this way, then they need somebody else to step up.
They
do have Cliff Lee.
So he's okay.
That whole big three concept that they said of Hamels, Lee, and Halladay.
It didn't last.
It's
not. It didn't even really start.
No, it never did because there was injuries and everything else going on.
One last thing. Robinson Cano does the most New York thing of all time and signs his new agent. You might have heard of him. Jay-Z, some rapper character. I think it's a pretty good sign that he's going to re-sign with the Yankees if he's signing with Jay-Z. He dropped Scott Boras, which is curious, I guess, but when you want to sign with Jay-Z, why not, right? I don't know. Is there anything to think of this, or is it just kind of like, oh, Jay-Z wants to do something else?
This is what I think of it. Brooklyn, we go hard. That's what I think of it. I don't really make a whole lot of it other than it's a publicity stunt. It gets Jay-Z's name out there even more.
Do you think Jay-Z
better?
Do you think Jay-Z will become a full-time agent? Do you think he'll get a few more classics?
It's other people behind the scenes that's doing all the dirty work. Jay-Z's name's just there.
Okay, so, I mean, Jay-Z, if he wants to become a full-time agent, if he wants to represent NBA players, he has to sell his share in the Nets. You don't see him becoming a full-time agent across all sports, mainly basketball, and you don't see him getting LeBron or Dwayne Wade,
Maybe, but it's bogus. After taking PR classes...
You're an expert, eh?
No, but I can certainly spot a spin whenever I see one, and this definitely is just a publicity stunt for Jay-Z and getting his name a little bit out there. Whenever, if there's ever something that goes wrong, then he'll definitely... take his name out of it and allow the company to keep on prospering. But he's going to make a lot more money by being a rapper and a shareholder in the Brooklyn Nets rather than being.
Well, he only owns 1% of the Nets, but yes. But does this make or lose money for Robinson Cano in contract negotiations? Not extra stuff, just purely contract negotiations. At Scott Boras. He gets a lot of money for his clients.
Robinson Cano and these players, I don't know.
I mean, he deserves whatever he wants, really.
Yes, and he can go wherever he wants, too. But, I don't know, I'm just one of those guys that I'm like, man, you already have $90 billion. Why do you need $90 billion more over 3 years?
Why not?
That's a little bit extravagant, but...
$90 billion, I don't think we've hit that stage
but,
yet. We will.
But still, like... It's ridiculous the amount of money that these guys are making as it is. And I think either way, he's going to make a lot of money, whether he gets a few million more here or a few million more with Jay-Z or a few million less with Boras. What's the big deal? That's just my views on it. What do you think?
I don't know. I think the Yankees will probably offer him a fair contract. They'll ask for a little bit more, and then the Yankees will give him a little bit less, and then they'll get, it'll be a negotiation. He'll get a fair deal wherever he wants, and he probably wants to stay in New York, and why not?
Bring him to the Jays. Have let's three Dominicans in the infield.
Well, yeah, that would be four if you put him at second. Well, I guess Lori. Well, right. If he currently, okay, yes. Let's just go Team Dominican. Win a World Baseball Classic. Win a World Series. Just win, baby.
That'd be okay with me.
Al Davis, just win, baby. And with that, week two in the books.
Jeremy and Ryan show, or as Jeremy has said at the start, so the Ryan and Jeremy show.
Thanks for listening. Hope you have a good week. We'll talk to you later.